The 1-1 outside of the changeup. 2-1. Wisconsin Rapids just hoping for something here. Just to continue to fight up to five hits. Two balls, a strike. The 2-1 from Gallo and foul on the inside. 2-2. That looked like if Smigelski doesn't swing at that, that comes way inside. But nonetheless, the count runs at two apiece. So two balls, two strikes. Lordoy stands at first. Let off with a base hit. Gallo sets the 2-2 to Smigelski, and a swing and a ball lifted out third baseline. Smigelski, a 3 RBI day yesterday. Raptors hoping to pull off what would be another walk-off. If Smigelski can get on base here, would put the tying run up at the plate with Kyle Carlson on deck. Gallo looks over at first, and the 2-2 to Smigelski to change up, fouled away. It's a good pitch there, but Smigelski was on top of it. He fouls a lot. Rightfully so, a guy that leads the team in batting average with a .333. Will make these fans happy here in Lakeshore if they can pull off a win, but Wisconsin Rapids, they have work to do. The 2-2 to Smigelski, and a liner into right field. On the way to cut it off is Meyer. Lordoy to third. Runners on first and third, and here come the Rafters. So Wisconsin Rapids right now has a tying run at the plate. Lakeshore struggling right now to get any of their first out. It was a big hit for Smigelski. He stands at first. At third is Lordoy. Rafters hoping to make this game, hoping to tie it at least. Kyle Carlson, the tying run. Rafters have not tied this game the entire day. As right now, coach out there, it's not Trevor Cho, it's, can't tell who that is as of now, but he's out there with the infield right now to discuss the circumstances. As Lawrence Gallo, a strikeout, he's given up two hits. Runners on first and third. No outs. Kyle Carlson, who's 1-for-3 with a run. So Smigelski and Lordoy each with a base hit. Gallo will go to work here on Carlson, and a first pitch strike down the plate, 0-1. So no balls, a strike. Rafters on the verge. Making this game interesting. They certainly have as the time being, but getting on the board, that's the big thing. And the 0-1 from Gallo. Another strike, 0-2. Two straight pitches, two strikes. On deck is Gus Walker. In for Jack Gifford. Gallo looking for strikeout number two. Runners at the corners. The 0-2 to Carlson, and a changeup above of the zone at a ball, 1-2. One ball, two strikes. Smigelski with a base hit in the right. Lordoy with a base hit in the center. Runners at the corners. Looking in, setting the 1-2. And a swing and a miss. Carlson goes down on the right edge. And that puts two away, one out now, two away. As Gus Walker, the right fielder, pinch hitting in for Gifford. So Walker, a guy that's had no hits on two at-bats. He's had a run as well. Been struck out twice. So the left-hander out of Marion University, and we'll see the ball down low. A 1-0. So 1-0 count with one down. Gus Walker, the left-hander. Lefty on lefty. And Gallo looks in, sets, and a swing and a bouncer pulled away right field side, 1-1. So Lakeshore looking to hold on. Wisconsin Rapids just trying to find anything here. There's runners on first and third. Tying run still at the plate. One out. The count is 1-1. Gallo looking for his second save. Up to 27 pitches. He's given up 2 hits, 2 strikeouts. On deck is Jensen. The 1-1. And a pass ball that goes behind Johannes. Lordoy scores. Smigalski to second. And now 5-3. 2 balls and a strike. 5-3. And Wisconsin Rapids right now are so close. Two balls a strike. On deck is Jensen. The 2-1. And another pass ball on his way to third is Smigalski. And 3-1 is the count. So 3 balls a strike. Gus Walker, this would put the winning run at the plate. So 3-1. 1 gone. Gallo has some work to do. The 3-1 now. And down low for ball 4. Walker will take first. This puts runners at first and third. The tying run on base. Trevor Cho now coming out, and Gallo's day looks to be done. Yes. So Levi Jensen on deck. Rafters are so close. Tying this ball game. Gus Walker, I would assume he's a guy that has already, well, he doesn't have any stolen bases, but he's a guy that definitely attempts to do that. He's fast at Marion University from Albuquerque, New Mexico. 1 gone. So, I mean, this is an opportunity here for Wisconsin Rapids. Right now, they are in a situation where a new pitcher is stepping in for the Chinooks. This would be big.
Nolan Cale.
So Nolan Cale will be making his first appearance on the mound today. So Nolan Cale, a guy who's stepped on in an opportunity for him to look to retire this side. He's had a 2-1 record, 7 games appeared, and 14 innings of work. The redshirt freshman out of Waukesha, Wisconsin, from St. Cloud State University. It's allowed 12 hits, 7 runs, 7 strikeouts, and 10 walks. 1 gone. Gus Walker at first with 1 out. Smigalski at third. Rafters have a chance. Only 1 out here, so. Nolan Cale. His last appearance was against Green Bay, where he went 2 innings, gave up a hit, and 2 walks. 3.86 ERA for the right-hander. Looking to get 2 outs, but if you're the Rafters' sake, you just continue to swing well. And it looks like, instead of Levi Jensen here, it might be James Bornick instead of Jensen. I think it will be. Yeah, it is. James Bornick. So Bornick pinch hitting for Jensen. James Bornick, another Marion guy. A guy that's batting a 231, 6 hits on 26 at-bats. 1 gone. Tying run at first. Each team with 6 hits. James Bornick, 4 RBIs. Kale sets, serves on Bornick at a first pitch strike that paints the left corner, 0-1. So no balls to strike with 1 down. 0-1 count, 5-3, Lakeshore leads. Tying run at first, the 4th run at 3rd, as the 0-1 way up above the zone at a ball, 1-1. So 1 ball, 1 strike with 1 out. 1-1 is the count. The set, the serve to Bornick outside of the ball, 2-1. So two balls, a strike. On deck is the leadoff hitter, Ty Johnson. What a time for it to come. Walker at first, Smigelski at third. And the 2-1 from Kale. Down low, bounced away in a foul, 2-2.
Yeah, at least I'm not the only one who sees
it. Two balls, two strikes. You have Madison leading 8-7 in the top of the ninth over Green Bay. Well, that inning just headed to the bottom of the ninth, so we can hope the Raptors pull away with a win. Two balls, two strikes. The 2-2 to Bornick fouled away. Walker was on his way to second and charging after that almost to make it in time. 2-2. So Nelson almost got to it. Nolan Kale looking for his first strikeout. Would be a big strikeout. As he checks off over at first to Walker. Walker's definitely looking to take second. On deck is Ty Johnson. Two balls, two strikes. 2-2 from Kale to Bornick, and a swing of the ball popped up away back behind home plate. 2-2. So Nolan Kale, six pitches so far. A fourth pitcher out of the bullpen for Lakeshore has an opportunity to get a big second out, but if you're the Raptors, Bornick's got to get on base. One gone, tying run at first. Smigelski at third, the 2-2 to Bornick, and a swing of the ball popped up in the air towards the third baseman, Nelson, who comes under it to make the catch. And that's the second out. So Ty Johnson, what a time for him to step in. He's 0 for 4, though, has an RBI. And when you need him most, he's a guy that can step up when needed. Has an RBI in each of his past four games, including a home run in three of his past four. A guy that leads a team in hits, at-bats, runs. So Nolan Kale will face Johnson. This is exactly what you want. I mean, yes, two outs, but you're at the top of the order. Johnson, the left-hander, he grounded out to second last time up. Kale checks off over at first. Two down. Each team with six hits. One away. Lakeshore looking for their first victory. And they set the serve to Johnson. And it comes in at a ball. 1-0. A 1-0 count. Owen Kale looking for that all-important third out. Ty Johnson right now. 0 for 4. But there's always a time where Ty can step up big. And the 1-0. And a pass ball that goes behind Johannes. Smigelski scores. And now it's 5-4. 2-0 in the tying run at second with two down. Nolan Kale. Five to four, Raptors have made it a one-run game. Two outs. Gus Walker at second. A base hit could potentially put the tying run in. Kale looks over at second. And the 2-0 now. This time in for a strike, 2-1. So two strikes away. Two balls, one strike. 5-4. 2-1 is the count. The 2-1 to Johnson and fouled off, 2-2. So now one strike away puts Johnson out. Nolan Kale looking for that all-important strike. Gus Walker stands at second. Deuces run across the board. Is this the moment for Ty Johnson right now? 0 for 4. He has an RBI. He's been struck out twice. A 271 batter leading the team in hits. Kale looks at Walker. A 2-2 to Johnson and a swing of the ball popped up in the air towards the third baseman, Nelson. Comes under it to make the catch, and that does it. Lakeshore hangs on to win 5-4. Raptors made it interesting, but the Chinooks' first win since July the 31st. And man, oh man, Wisconsin Rapids, they were close, but didn't play well enough late. as they had the tying run on second. But Lakeshore hangs on to take down Wisconsin Rapids. That is not good because Madison right now, they're leading 8-7 in the bottom of the ninth. The only thing we can do for them is we can hope that they lose. So there's two outs, though. So hopefully Green Bay gets a home run or something to tie that game. But Wisconsin Rapids falls 5-4 into a Lakeshore game where each team had six hits, but the Chinooks just got runs when it mattered, and specifically the seventh and eighth inning. But Wisconsin Rapids, they're going to have to shake this off because they're going to have the biggest series of the season against the Madison Mallards at Warner Park tomorrow and Thursday. So, you know, we look at this matchup, and each team has had five games they've won. So 5-5 on that series. And I will say, though, it is a huge, crucial game because that could put the Raptors right back in towards the playoffs, possibly leading at that point or put them out. So, I mean, the series and the games don't get any bigger than tomorrow and Thursday in Madison at Warner Park. But for now, Raptors are going to have to shake this off, head back, and get some good night's rest before they head down to Madison to continue this five-game away stand. But a costly loss for the Raptors. You look at this, just did not play well. They got down early 3-0. But, you know, for everybody at Wisconsin Rapids Raptors, for the players, coaches, and staff, we hope the Raptors can get back to winning ways tomorrow as they'll take on Madison. But for now, have a good night, everybody. We'll see you at Warner Park.
...2024 when he's reelected. And maybe if you get a Democratic Congress, maybe you get something, you know, to add on to help us move forward even further. But that comes back to us. That comes back to the voters doing what they did today in Ohio. Holding Republicans accountable when they overreach. And I say this all the time. Republicans hate working people. Look at what they do. Brought us the world that we're in. Brought us the struggle of the moment that workers are in. I see things turning around. And this is why we need to come together more than we are. And put down the red hat and the blue hat and get that hard hat. And because we've got a lot of rebuilding to do. Just seems like now's the time. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com, or give us a call, 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Kamala Harris was in Philadelphia talking about prevailing wage. What's that? I know, right? Going to come back with that. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.
My name is Juanita Segura, and I was diagnosed in November of 2014 with non-small cell lung cancer. The first time I heard about biomarker testing was actually my husband. He just started researching about lung cancer.
And I found out about biomarker testing, and I'm like, why not? Let's try it.
I'm Dr. Jorge Gomez, thoracic medical oncologist at the Mount Sinai Hospital. Comprehensive biomarker testing is looking for either substances in the blood or mutations in some of the genes of the cancer cells that can help us identify special types of lung cancer that can be treated with what we call targeted therapies.
Letting my children know brought all of us a sense of hope. To give them hope that mom is going to be around to see you grow up. And I promised them that.
Ask your doctor about how comprehensive biomarker testing before treatment may help you and your doctor decide on the best treatment for you. Visit noonemissed.org for more.
A public service message from Longevity Foundation.
It'd be great if life came with a remote control. You know, you could hit pause when you needed to, or hit rewind. Like that time you knocked down that wasp's nest.
Uh-oh.
Or that time you forgot to roll up your windows in the car wash.
Fantastic.
Yeah, a remote control would have come in handy then. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome. But prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Life doesn't come with a remote control.
Yikes!
So you're on your own with the WASPs. You have the power to take control of prediabetes. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news talk and sports is on 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
Reagan administration, and again, conservative, Republican, corporate Democrats, those ilk began attacking prevailing wage. And we've seen the attacks all across this country. There are a number of states, Iowa, oddly enough, being one of them, that went and repealed their state, their baby bacons, their state prevailing wage laws. On the national level, it's called the Davis-Bacon Act. On the state levels, you have prevailing wage laws, or they call them baby bacons, that are just on the state level. And what they say is, look, and this, again, this is very much New Deal, my grandparents' generation thinking. And it's not wrong. It's actually smart policy. It's saying, look, if we're going to use tax dollars to build a road, to build a bridge, to build a school, to build a hospital, to build, you know, to build anything, whatever we, the citizens, need, whatever procurement our tax dollars are going to pursue, we should be pursuing high road employment. We should be ensuring that the people who are doing those jobs have some decent wages, have decent benefits, have good working conditions, stability, you know, all that stuff. And she was in Philly today to say, look, we're going to move back to that era. And what's interesting to me is how little we know about prevailing wage. And this is one of those things that I remember years ago, I was giving a presentation to the building trades, and I got in trouble for it because what they heard and what I said were two completely different things. I said, look, you know, there are people out there who are rallying against prevailing wage, who are, you know, holding these demonstrations against prevailing wage. And in the media, everyone is saying, look, you know, it must be bad because there are people out there who are against it. And, you know, our voice is one of the few out in the media structure saying, hey, there's a benefit to this. In states that have done away with their prevailing wage laws, think Iowa, think West Virginia. Oddly enough, West Virginia, their Republican governor, Jim Justice, who did both, passed the whole no rights at work thing, no right to work law, and repealed prevailing wage, came out not too long after and said, hey, we did all that, didn't help. We were told it was going to be the panacea. It was going to bring us jobs. It was going to be fabulous. And it made things worse. And there's a definitive study on this that was done years ago about Iowa, where when they did away with their prevailing wage laws back in the, I think it was back in the 80s, what they found is that the people who were in the building trades were sufficiently talented enough to find other jobs. So as the wages went down in those jobs, they were able to find other employment, start their own businesses, you know, find other employment. And what happened then is you ended up getting transients coming through. You would get, you know, fly-by-night transient, you know, contractors to come through. And, you know, they would underbid things and they would do a shoddy half-you-know-what job and take off. And here you're left with this halfway done monstrosity that you overpaid for because you had to pay somebody to come in and do it right. And you still don't have a local building trades because all those people left. And that had played out in a number of other places. That's been kind of the reality of what we know. You have these skilled craftspeople who are like, you know what, if I'm not making a good living doing this, I'll go do something else because I have the opportunity to do that. And then you get these contractors like, well, I got to get anybody. So, hey, let's get that crew that, you know, I don't know what they build, but they'll slap something together. And as I've always said, I want the person building the school that my kid is, that my kid's sitting at. I want that person who's building that. I want that person's kid sitting next to mine. Because I'll know the roof was put on right. I want to know that the people who do this work have a vested interest in it being done the best possible way. Now, whenever I talk about prevailing wage and also project labor agreements, I can't talk about any of it without the tale of two bridges. And for those who have never heard this, the reality is you've got two bridges, one on each coast. You've got the Tappan Zee in New York, and you've got the Bay Bridge in California. The Bay Bridge, they thought was going to cost like $250 million a number of years ago, actually ended up costing something like $6.5 billion. Yeah, that's a big difference. And it's actually, from what I understand, never going to be actually completed. It's never going to be done because it keeps breaking. Things, you know, the Chinese steel that they use, the Chinese cables, the Chinese welders, because they didn't use prevailing wage or project labor agreement. They went and they thought, we're going to get cheaper labor. We're going to be able to cut corners and bring in these shoddy contractors who did shoddy work. Now, you go to the New York Bridge, the Tappan Zee, which was all done under a project labor agreement, all with prevailing wage labor, done not just on time, but early, and not just on budget, but under budget. And done, actually done. And a very beautiful bridge. I've been over it a couple of times. Very much better than the old Tappan Zee, which was actually on wooden floats that were rotting. Did not give me great confidence going over that bridge. But this is the difference in what you get. So now you've got the administration saying, we're going to go back and we're going to strengthen these prevailing wage laws to ensure that workers get a fair shake, get a raise, and that we attract the best people into these jobs. Now, I've had people say, but Rick, you know, those are the prevailing wage, that's just the union wage. And you go, no, it's the prevailing wage. It's the wage most often paid in that area for that job. You got 10 people working at the same job, and six of them are making $9 an hour, and two are making three, and two are making seven. The prevailing wage is $9 an hour. So if you're going to do that job on a federal contract, everyone gets paid $9 an hour to do that job. This is how you end up raising the wages. And I've talked to non-union contractors and non-union labor, and they love prevailing wage jobs. Only one problem with them, and this I've heard this over and over and over again. All of these guys who work in construction love prevailing wage jobs because they get paid better. They get benefits. They get health care and retirement money. They get all this stuff. It's great. Problem is you get these contractors who screw them out of prevailing wage, misclassify them, and then pocket the money themselves. Which is why one of the knocks against prevailing wages is its lack of enforcement. The unions do what they can, and they police it as best they can. They do a good job doing it. But there's always someone out there trying to cheat working people. And this is where the Biden administration is saying, we're going to streamline some of this. We're going to make it easier to make sure that people don't get cheated.
Keep up on the day's news, talk, and sports on Wisconsin's home for locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Right arm, right leg.
Left leg, left arm.
Both legs above the knee.
Both legs, part of my left hand.
Lost both my legs in Iraq.
These 9/11 veterans are just a few of the heroes we serve at Homes for Our Troops. For nearly 2,000 severely injured veterans, everyday life has become filled with barriers. So we build specially adapted homes with features like wheelchair access, roll-in showers, and pull-down cabinets that allow them to function independently, and focus on their recovery and family. This life-changing gift of freedom is provided mortgage-free to these veterans, thanks to our donors and supporters. But we need you to join us, too, in completing this important mission. Please visit HFOTUSA.org and help build homes and rebuild lives.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
It's so hot. Wait. Now it's going to rain? It is summer in Wisconsin.
As much as we love it, we love to hate it too. Find a forecast you can count on along with the in-depth details you need only from the Civic Media Weather Team.
These extended conditions have led us into a flash drought. Sitting in these above average temperatures with minimal rain has swiftly altered the local climate.
Your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Do you catch yourself quoting TV shows like that? It could win you a free meal and make you our next star of the day with Culver's. Join the morning show on WFHR every Friday.
What you talking about, Willis?
My name's James, and I'm telling people every Friday we'll play a theme song or a quote from a movie.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give it.
You call 424-2600, give the correct answer, and you'll win a family pack from our Wisconsin Rapids Culver's.
To the Batmobile.
Join the morning show every Friday for Culver's Star of the Day.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Did you know the Wisconsin State Fair is 172 years old? It still celebrates the industries important to our state's history, like agriculture. But every year, new attractions and items are added. This year, there's more than 100 new foods to try. So what do you think topped the culinary list last year? Flamin' hot Cheetos chicken on a stick? Deep-fried old-fashioned? Or Pino pretzel popper brat? The answer's coming up. The Wisconsin State Fair didn't start in its current home of West Allis. The first was in Janesville along the Rock River, then moved to different locations the next 40 years. The original cream puff has been around almost as long. Close to 400,000 are gobbled up every year. So which food was number one last year? It was the Pino pretzel popper brat. It came out on top. The State Fair is a true slice of Wisconsin, and it runs through August 13th. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Chris Domine is a husband and a father. Chris is an athlete. Chris is even an Iron Man. But 10 years ago, Chris was facing a very different story because his kidneys were failing.
Basically, the doctor said, if you don't get a kidney transplant and if you don't do dialysis, you are going to die.
Fortunately, Chris received a second chance at life, made possible by an organ donor.
You know, your well-being changes. From loss of hope to better times ahead.
More than 100 million people in America are registered organ, eye, and tissue donors. People of every age and ethnicity, because they believe it's the right thing to do. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life. Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
Bug Tussle, providing high-speed internet to rural Wisconsin. No data caps, no contracts. 877-227-0924. Call today to learn how you can get 3 months free. 877-227-0924.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Lows dip down to about 57. Tonight, under partly cloudy skies, winds out of the west around 5 miles per hour. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times again. Tomorrow, chance for scattered thunderstorms. Daytime highs approaching 84. Slight chance for scattered storms. Tomorrow night, lows level off around 55. Partly cloudy skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 76.
Change emergency. Even as he's pushed new laws to remove the people's right to challenge corporate profiteering at the expense of climate sanity. This is Jim Hightower saying, yes, the Republicans are worse, but pointing that out is neither a policy nor good politics. Climate change is not a future problem, it is now. If Biden wonders why his approval rating is a woeful 39%, there it is. People want and need presidential boldness, not a hot weather website.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it looks like Vivek Ramaswamy, he has become the first Republican candidate to qualify for the presidential debate, the first RNC committee debate, by signing the pledge. And the pledge is that you will support the party's nominee no matter what. And this is, again, Republicans are, they love pledges, don't they? We'll starve children. We won't do anything on taxes. We won't stop people from getting guns and shooting kids in the schoolyard. But we'll send thoughts and prayers. But Republicans are good at pledges, aren't they? I mean, lots of pledges. I think it's the mentality. I think it's that kind of, I do. I think it gives them some kind of comfort to know that I've signed a pledge. Whereas I'm going, wait a second, I don't think I'm ever going to tell you that I'm never going to sign a pledge that says I'm never going to do something. Or that I'm absolutely going to do something. I would never do that. And this pledge that you're gonna have to, if you want to debate, you want to be one of us, you want to be in the club, you've got to sign on that you will support the nominee. Well, what if it is Trump? Because understand, Trump is whipping everyone's behind. There's no one even close. And Trump would be an idiot to go through the debates. Because it's only down for him. He should hold his own event on the night of the debate and mock them for having a debate without him. Because the party is that far gone. And now think of yourself. If you're Chris Christie, are you going to sign a pledge that says, you know, I've been hammering this guy? Yeah, are you Mike Pence? This is the guy that wanted me hung? I'm going to pledge to support the guy that wanted me to be hung. Are you freaking kidding me? But that's Republicans. They love their pledges. You know, it's like the tax thing. And they stuck to them, didn't they? The one thing I give George H.W. Bush credit for was not an H.W. fan. There are only two things I agreed with him on. I don't like broccoli. And raising taxes when he had to. When he looked at the books, and he said, oh my gosh, we're running up massive deficits. We should probably pay for our stuff. And then had to go back on his pledge of read my lips, no new taxes, because it was for the good of the country. And he got beaten for it. Lesson learned. And now Republicans understand this. So they give them these no tax pledges, which means, you know, I'm never going to raise taxes ever, 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 ever. Even if we go into, what are we at now? $35, $36 trillion in debt, all because of Republican tax pledges? You can't blame the Republicans for that. Yeah, I can. And I think I just did. Because it's them who moved us from a 70% tax rate all the way down to 28%. It's them who said, no, no, we're going to ensure that the wealth class of this country gets to get all of the spoils, and workers, you can pick up the difference. This is one of those things that's just infuriating to me. Also, Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves is going to be facing Democratic challenger Brandon Presley in the Mississippi governor's race. And I think everyone knew this is where it was going to go. But Tate Reeves, you know, put down two challengers. Presley was unopposed. So we'll see what happens in November. There are some who think that the cousin of Elvis might actually have a chance, that Elvis's cousin may actually have a chance to, you know, be a Democratic governor in Mississippi. Oh, wow. Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be great? Let's quick go to the phones. Got Steve in Chicago on line one. Steve, how are you?
Fine, thank you. And I think you raise a really important point there with regard to how we regard taxes and the need to fund the things that society needs in order to function. And unfortunately, I think, you know, as you pointed out, rightfully so, the Republican Party has adopted this sort of unofficial mantra that at no point is it worthwhile to raise taxes, no matter what we need to do. The fact is that taxes paid for the economic booms that have made this country what it is. You know, or the infrastructure that is necessary, the educational institutions, the healthcare institutions, these things that we paid for through taxes are how we elevated the economy, because it's not a zero-sum game. It's not as if you invest a dollar in infrastructure and therefore you lose a dollar other places. No, you invest a dollar in infrastructure and you get back 10 in productivity. But the Republican mantra seems to be, well, God forbid that we invest in anything because it's going to cost dollars, and that means we may have to raise somebody's taxes. Now, in the long run, we can't sell the fact that that's going to be beneficial for this society and this country. So instead, we're just going to be opposed to any hikes in taxes, anything other than perhaps needing to fund the military, which the Republican Party is always willing to do. But other than that, yeah, everything else is pretty much off limits. And as a result of which, you know, we've been living by a dream in terms of the things that we really needed to fund, like infrastructure, because we are decades behind and we still haven't passed enough in the way of infrastructure funding to repair and maintain the things that have decayed over many decades of neglect. And that's the problem. And again, this idea that society simply functions magically and without having to invest in anything and to repair anything and to maintain anything is just ridiculous. And we're trying to keep up in a global economy with India and China and so much of the rest of the world. Guess what? It's not 1946 anymore.
No, you know, right.
A lot of the rest of the world is caught up, and that means we have to try and stay competitive, and that means we need to invest in ourselves. But, you know, God forbid that we do that sort of thing.
No, absolutely. And, you know, the American Society of Civil Engineers did a report, I think it was last year, said $4.8 trillion is what we needed to get even. So the $1.2 trillion that Biden got through on the infrastructure bill, not even close to what we need. A good start, good first step. But not what the American Society of Civil Engineers say we need.
Yeah, and unfortunately, because as we all know, a lot of Americans, they don't leave the country. They don't travel very much. For people like myself who have traveled, and you've seen things like modern airports, you know, that are run on 21st century technology, you realize just how bad our system is.
Yeah.
You know, people come here from other parts, from Asia, from Europe. You know, we don't have high-speed rail. We don't have modern airports. I mean, and things are just falling apart. And, yeah, that's what happens when you don't invest. And instead, you decide that you need to create more and more billionaires and millionaires.
Now, I'm not a big Thomas Friedman.
It's going to catch up to you.
I'm not a Thomas Friedman fan by any stretch of the imagination. But he had a great line to emphasize what you're saying. He said he came from he went from Beijing to LAX. And he said it was like going from the Jetsons to the Flintstones.
Oh, absolutely. And it's a shame because, you know, we were once, you know, the cutting edge of advancement, the cutting edge of technology. You know, we were that shining city on a hill that, you know, we thought that was going to last forever. Well, guess what? The rest of the world kept modernizing, and we just kept holding on to what we had built in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And now we're paying for it.
No, you're spot on right. I appreciate it, Steve. Thank you.
Take care.
And look, you know, Steve brings up a whole bunch of really good points, and thank you for validating some of mine. But, you know, as he was talking about, you know, conservatives believing in, you know, magic thinking, you go, well, yeah, that's who they are. You know, the person that's looking down to keep them to be decent human beings, you know, wanting those 10 rules plastered everywhere because they can't remember them. And then the invisible hand of the market that's supposed to, you know, magically do all this stuff, that there's no actual planning into any of this. But even more nefarious than that is their fetish of privatization. And as Steve was talking, I was remembering a conversation I was having with my teenage son, who is coming aware of, you know, politically of where we are and what the future is. He's turning into kind of a gearhead. You know, we're learning to ride motorcycles. You know, he's into cars now. So he's kind of starting to think about, you know, the world that he's going to inherit. And, you know, we were talking about EVs and electric cars and the future of, you know, driving, because, you know, we both we'll go out on the bikes and we'll ride for, you know, an hour or two or three. And he's like, you know, in the future, I don't think we're going to be able to do this. He goes, I fear in the future that, you know, everything's going to be electric. All the cars will be on the grid. You know, the 5G will know everywhere where you are at every moment. And, you know, there won't be any more policemen to pull you over because the car will know if you're speeding. And he has this whole thing laid out that him and his friends talk about of what the future is going to be. Of, you know, look, if I want to do 100 miles an hour on my motorcycle, that I'll be able to do that. But it'll just tell me how much the fine is going to be to do it. And if you want to get to work 10 minutes earlier and you want to, you know, go into the, you know, the certain lane that's going to let you do 20 miles an hour more, it's going to cost you this much. Now, if you want to obey the traffic signs and deal with the traffic, you know, of course, that will still be, you know, somewhat free, but everything else is going to cost you. And as I was telling him, I go, that is conservative world. That's the world that they envision. Everything is for a profit. Everything is in the hands of a corporate interest, in the hands of someone seeking profit. Because in, I don't know if they actually believe this or if it's what, you know, their controllers are pushing. But when a handful of people control all of these levers of your life and you're paying them every month, every week, every day, they're going to make a lot of money. And I've often joked about, you know, when we go on vacation, it seems like, you know, the most exercise I get is putting my hand into my pocket and pulling my wallet out, especially if you go to Florida, which we will not be going to again. You know, DeSantis's Florida is, well, the cost of, you know, the rental costs have quadrupled over the last couple of years. It's crazy. But, you know, you go there and everything's privatized. You want to go to a public park? It's going to cost you, you know, $8 a head. You want to cross this bridge? It's going to cost you that much. You want to do this? Every time you do anything, it's costing you. And he sees this and he understands that's conservative world. That's the future for him. And it's frightening because no one knows if the jobs are going to be able to afford those kind of scenarios. Instead of what my grandparents' generation built, which we had the commons. You know, you had public parks, you had, you know, public parking, you had public transit, you had public hospitals, you had things that the public did for itself through its tax base. You had public swimming pools that didn't cost you an arm and a leg to go to. I remember when I was a kid, it was this is sounding really old, and I'm only 56. It was a quarter to go to the Gunnings pool. Now I think it's like $9 locally. I mean, it's crazy, but it's those things that the community used to do for itself that are now being pushed off. We've got to make a profit because we've got to pay someone. Our transit authorities have been, you know.
From the home of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news, talk, and sports station.
And he's going, I don't know that this is the future I want. He goes, but I don't know that we can stop it. So right now, it's that kind of gallows humor where he's just joking about it. But I fear he's not wrong. And the rest of us should be too. So again, you know, it comes back to, it's policy stuff. The stuff that really affects our lives, we don't seem to be talking about. You know what we're talking about? We're talking about who's drinking what beer and who's wearing a dress. And I don't care on all of those issues. I mean, and I've had these conversations before. I want people to lead their best lives. Don't care. I want people to be able to support their families and lead their best lives. That's where we should be. I don't care what my neighbor is doing. I don't care what the person across the street or across town or across the country. I don't care what they're doing. And we used to think like that as a society. Now everybody seems to be all worried about what everybody else is doing and offended for everybody else. Maybe there's a way forward. I'm not sure. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Also going to take your calls, 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1994. President Bill Clinton posthumously awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Latino farm worker organizer Cesar Chavez. It is the highest honor granted to civilians. His widow, Helen, accepted the honor on his behalf. Chavez founded the United Farm Workers Union. He dedicated his life to organizing agricultural workers in California. Too often, agricultural workers have not received enough attention from labor leaders, despite their struggles to win better wages and improved conditions for themselves and their families. Chavez was one of the most important Latino labor organizers in U.S. history. In 1968, he helped lead a successful national boycott against California grape growers. The boycott won increased wages for those workers and demonstrated the power of the boycott in farm labor organizing. The medal ceremony was held in the East Room of the White House. United Farm Workers leaders attended the ceremony, including Dolores Huerta, the farm union's co-founder and first vice president. President Clinton's remarks in granting the medal captured the impact and sacrifice of this labor activist. President Clinton said, "The farm workers who labored in the fields and yearned for self-respect and self-sufficiency pinned their hopes on this remarkable man, who with faith and discipline, with soft-spoken humility and amazing inner strength, led a very courageous life, and in doing so, brought dignity to the lives of so many others, and provided for us an inspiration for the rest of our nation's history." In his life, Cesar Chavez never made more than $5,000 a year. And yet, the richness of his life and legacy left a lasting imprint on the cause of labor. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. Show.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind? Email me, Rick, at TheRickSmithShow.com. So the way it's looking, it looks like a 70-30 blowout. If that's what I'm looking at, that seems really high on the results in Ohio. That's got to be really high. that does seem kind of high. Now, the reality is I was pretty sure it was going to go down. And a lot, because the hypocrisy, the hypocrisy of no, we're going to ban special elections, but oh, this one's so important. Now, the abortion issue again is I hate to say popular, but the number of people who I think are like me, I think most people. And this is where I'm gonna put this. I think most people are like me. I don't necessarily favor abortion. It's not something that I think is a good thing. But I want it safe and legal. I never want my daughters in a position to where they're in a back room alley or you know who knows where, and end up getting sick or end up getting an infection, and then they can't go to the doctor to get care because horrible things happen. We've seen the history of this. I think most people are in this safe and legal. I don't say I'm pro-abortion or anti. I say I'm pro-safety. I want people to be safe. And I've always said that conservatives, if you were really against the idea of abortion, you should make it much better to bring children into this world. You should make it easier. You should make you know, parents have better opportunities to get health care, to get education, to get child care. You should be pushing policies. And we're in this moment where, again, me as a policy person who believes, you know, good policy makes people's lives better, bad policy makes people's lives worse. Because ultimately, government decides who gets what. And right now, they're deciding the wealthy get all they want. But for me, I'm looking at this as if conservatives were really pro-life, and I don't cede them that ground. My daughter and I were having this conversation today because she kept saying, you know, the pro-life people. I go, they're not pro-life. They're anti-abortion because they don't care about that kid. They don't give a tinker's damn about that kid when it's popped out. When it takes its first breath, you're on your own, buddy. Start whittling some bootstraps out of that umbilical cord. Because we're going to get no help from us. And look, Iowa is the perfect example. You know, we talked to State Representative Sammy Sheets the other night. And he said, look, you know, they're trying to privatize education. They've privatized Medicaid. They're gutting the SNAP benefits. They're doing all this stuff to make it harder for poor and working class mothers to raise their children. And yet they want to force more people to have children that they can't afford. And the only decision that they're probably the only good decision they're making is by saying, no, I'm not ready to be a parent. And this was one of those things. My daughter and I were sitting at the pool today because I'm rehabbing my knee. And you go, you know, you need a license to get a dog. Anyone can be a parent. And now we're forcing people who wouldn't otherwise want to be parents. Now we're forcing them to be parents. How many bad parents are we creating? Because we're sitting at the pool watching a lot of that going on. And then how much is society going to have to pay for, you know, all of the negative side of the negative consequences that come out of poor parenting? I don't see any of those policies from our Republican friends. And I want them. Look, I don't want people having abortions. I want them to bring children into this world. But I don't want kids brought into the kind of environment I grew up in, to see the kind of violence, to see the kind of poverty, to see the kind of horrible things that I remember as a kid. No one should have to go through that. And policy can make that better. But we don't have Republicans who think that way. Understand, being anti-abortion is not about being pro-child. It's about being anti-mother. This is about controlling women, not helping them. This is about controlling families, not helping them to thrive and survive. So for me, I look at these people pushing this agenda as punitive. I look at them as being, you know, retaliatory. I look at them as being all of the things that not good. And as one woman said to me, you know, how many of them are on the adoption list to take these kids? Not many. So for me, I would love to see some of those policies. So again, back to the drumming that the Republicans took over this. This is popular in the state, and I don't know that it wouldn't have reached the 60 vote threshold anyway. But this again is one of these moments where Republicans are drunk with power in Ohio because they've gerrymandered the state so badly that they don't fear the electorate. They don't fear anybody going to vote them out. I don't know if this will be a wake-up call for them or, you know, if they're going to, you know, who knows what they try next election? Because, look, you know, someone, you know, tweeted over to us and said, hey, is this binding? And I'm like, well, I'm not quite sure what binding means. It means that come November, you're only going to need 50% plus one. It doesn't mean that come next.
Right arm, right leg.
Left leg, left arm.
Both legs above the knee.
Both legs, part of my left hand.
Lost both my legs in Iraq.
These 9/11 veterans are just a few of the heroes we serve at Homes for Our Troops. For nearly 2,000 severely injured veterans, everyday life has become filled with barriers. So we build specially adapted homes with features like wheelchair access, roll-in showers, and pull-down cabinets that allow them to function independently and focus on their recovery and family. This life-changing gift of freedom is provided mortgage-free to these veterans, thanks to our donors and supporters. But we need you to join us too in completing this important mission. please visit hfotusa.org and help build homes and rebuild lives.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.